I'm Tracy Sable tonight on EWTN News Nightly. Reaching out, President Joe Biden heads to New Orleans following the deadly terror attack on New Year's. Stepping down, major news from Canada and the future of Justin Trudeau, who has led the country for nearly a decade. Steel or no steel? New developments in the proposed merger between U.S. Steel and a Japanese company recently shot down by the Biden administration. Plus, new version of an old story. Why a religious sister in Brazil is receiving an honor from a group that studies life and longevity. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
With us on the Feast of the Epiphany, our top story tonight, Congress made it official today. Donald Trump will become the 47th president of the United States. During a joint session of Congress, lawmakers certified the electoral count, officially marking an end to the presidential election. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales has that story.
Good evening, Tracy. Amid a major snowstorm and tight security, lawmakers gathered inside the House chambers for this ceremonial event. Vice President Kamala Harris officiated over the election loss as the electoral totals were announced.
The votes for President of the United States are as follows. Donald J. Trump of the state of Florida has received 312 votes. Kamala D. Harris... Kamala D. Harris of the state of California has received 226 votes.
Democrats say they will respect the peaceful transfer of power.
I think what Democrats are trying to show today is we may not like the outcome of the election, but we need to respect the outcome of the election, the American people's vote.
Democrats were quick to bring up the events of 4 years ago when violent protests broke out amid the certification process.
I think January 6th remains unpopular. I think the attempted insurrection on January 6th is a mark of dishonor upon the American Republic, and actually a majority of voters recognize that, and a significant number of Republicans recognize that.
Senator Amy Klobuchar headed up efforts to put in place new security measures to avoid a repeat of violence.
What happened last time were an officer's words haunt me forever on the police line said, does anyone have a plan? Does anyone have a plan? And the answer from the leadership back then was no. Now we have clear leadership in place.
Congress will have a relatively light schedule this week, and groups of Republican lawmakers will be meeting with President-elect Donald Trump in Mar-a-Lago this weekend to plot out their legislative agenda.
What he wants to ensure is that we deliver the America First agenda. That is our mission. That is our intent. We had long work sessions over the weekend with all the House Republicans on that point, and we are going to get that job done.
Also want to let you know that former President Jimmy Carter will lie in state inside the Capitol Rotunda starting tomorrow night, and his services will take place Thursday, where a number of former presidents will honor his legacy. Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
President Joe Biden makes a trip to New Orleans to mourn with the victims of last week's terror attack. He plans to attend an interfaith prayer service hosted by the Archdiocese of New Orleans, taking place tonight at the Basilica of St. Louis, King of France, the Old Cathedral. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports.
President Joe Biden and the First Lady head to Louisiana to join prayers for peace and healing following the New Year's Day truck attack that killed or injured dozens of people.
We must continue to be prayerful for them because they're experiencing loss, as well as the victims who are trying to heal from their injuries and the police officers who went into the line of fire.
Investigators are reportedly checking to see if the attackers' trips to Egypt and Canada had anything to do with a deadly terror assault in New Orleans, which he previously scoped out using eyeglasses with a built-in camera.
So we know this was a thought-out, planned thing. This wasn't a random act of violence. He had thought this thing through, and that's what's chilling.
President Biden is also responding to the anniversary of the January 6, 2021 riot at the U.S. Capitol.
It's a day that most of our history we took for granted in the 6th, but I hope we never take it for granted again.
Biden commended what he called the bravery of the Capitol Police and thanked lawmakers in the House and Senate who, he says, that day, even with threats to their life, courageously fulfilled their duty to the Constitution, saying they showed up and did the work.
And our democracy is really literally put to the test. And thankfully, our democracy held.
Biden also released an editorial that warns an unrelenting effort has been underway to rewrite, even erase, the history of that day. He adds, we cannot allow the truth to be lost. And President-elect Donald Trump comments about today's certification of the presidential election, calling it a big moment in history. Trump also posting on Truth Social, Biden is doing everything possible to make the transition as difficult as possible, from lawfare, such as has never been seen before, to costly and ridiculous executive orders on the Green New Scam and other money-wasting hoaxes. Reporting near Washington, D.C., Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Very snowy Washington, D.C., and large parts of the United States are blanketed with snow, and millions are without power during a dangerously cold stretch of winter weather. Schools and government offices closed in several states as the nation combats the winter blast. The northeastern United States is set to face several more days of bitter cold temperatures, with select parts set to experience lows in the single digits. States in middle America are under blizzard conditions as they face the heaviest snow totals. Kentucky's governor explains the dire situation that his state is facing.
The roads became really treacherous. We had to help about 280 stranded motorists. We had a lot of jackknife trucks, a lot of backups that thankfully we were able to respond to. But then the second piece is we've got about 90,000 Kentuckians without power at the moment.
All right. Very dangerous situation indeed. And joining us now to talk more about this weather is meteorologist Scott Withers. Scott, great to be with you right now. I want to get to the power outages and everything else. But first, talk to us about what exactly a polar vortex is.
Tracy, this is actually normal for this time of year. We've had several years of above normal warm temperatures for the winter. So what a polar vortex is really simple. The in the upper atmosphere, basically the system, as the air moves, it just kind of drops down towards the south, and that allows all of the cold air from Canada to just kind of fill in the pocket that's left behind. And that's exactly what's happened. That's why we're seeing the snow that you see there. This massive winter storm just rolled across from basically St. Louis through the Ohio River Valley, now hammering the mid-Atlantic. Washington, D.C. could see totals that it hasn't seen in more than a decade. And when we're talking cold, it's just not the Northeast, Tracy. Get this, Panama City Beach, they're opening warming centers because tonight it's going to be below freezing.
Wow. And talk to us about those cold temperatures, Scott. I mean, just how cold can it get in some parts of the United States?
It's going to be below freezing for most of the eastern part of the U.S. today. We're talking from the Canadian border, as I said, down to the Gulf of Mexico, at or below freezing. Here in Atlanta, it is 34 degrees right now, so we're just hovering above freezing. We're going to get below today. That's why this is so dangerous. Just being outside at night in these temperatures for any extended amount of time could cause hypothermia, so it's very important to get inside, stay inside, go to if you don't have anywhere to go, go to one of those public warming centers. This is going to be brutal. And Tracy, unfortunately, not going to wrap up tonight. We're looking at cold temperatures like this each night for the next few days.
Wow. And a lot of places like Atlanta, where you are not used to this type of weather. Talk to us about how dangerous this can possibly get for folks, and maybe some tips for them to stay safe and stay warm.
Atlanta's a pretty big city, Tracy, and they have one snowplow for the entire city. So unfortunately, there's not going to be any snow here, but we've been raining all day, so that's going to turn into ice and slick roads tonight here, all the way down into southern Georgia and into northern Florida. As far as Gainesville, they're going to be dealing with a hard freeze tonight in Gainesville, Florida, almost all the way over to Jacksonville. So this is a significant event still. Now, the snow, the good news, Tracy, the snow is going to wrap up tonight and move out, and we're going to be done with the snow for a little bit. But the cold, bitter cold air that's just rushed across the border down from Canada, that's going to stick with us for a few more days.
Yeah, we've seen power outages and, unfortunately, even some deaths in this storm. Before I let you go, Scott, anything else we need to know?
Yeah, be prepared. This is not just today. We're going to see this throughout the weekend into next week. Keep in mind, we're only halfway through the winter season. So stay inside as much as possible. If you're trying to keep your temperature in your house about 65, 68 degrees so the pipes don't freeze up, if you don't have anywhere to go, go to call the police, go to the fire department. They will get you to a warming center.
Absolutely. And do not use those generators indoors. That can turn deadly.
Exactly.
All right. Thank you so much, Scott. Stay warm. While it is a tale of ice in the east, it could soon be a tale of fire in the west. This week, humidity levels will drop and winds will pick up in California, raising the risk of wildfires. Gusts could reach as high as 80 miles an hour in the southern part of the state. This includes areas that just went through the Franklin fire last month. The winds have brought with them warmer weather, and there has been very little rain so far this season. All right, now to Canadian politics, where a major shift in leadership is now underway. After nearly a decade in office, Justin Trudeau announced that he is resigning as Prime Minister.
And the fact is, despite best efforts to work through it, Parliament has been paralyzed for months after what has been the longest session of a minority Parliament in Canadian history. I intend to resign as party leader, as prime minister, after the party selects its next leader through a robust, nationwide, competitive process.
Well, there has been a rising discontent over Trudeau's leadership. The abrupt departure of his finance minister last month signaled the growing turmoil within the government. The government upheaval does not stop there. South Korea investigators are working to extend a warrant to detain suspended President Yoon Suk-yeol. He is wanted for questioning over his short-lived martial law decree last month. Yoon had stepped up security around the presidential compound. Barbed wire is wrapped up around its walls while vehicles are blocking the entrances. Officials tried to arrest him on Friday but gave up after a six-hour standoff with supporters and his security team. In the midst of all this, North Korea has fired what appears to be an intermediate-range ballistic missile. South Korea's military said that it flew more than 600 miles before falling into the sea. The launch came as U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken was in Seoul. He condemned the action and issued a warning about North Korea's relationship with Russia.
We condemn the DPRK's missile launch just today, yet another violation of multiple UN Security Council resolutions. Now, we have reason to believe that Moscow intends to share advanced space and satellite technology with Pyongyang, and that Putin may be close to reversing a decades-long policy by Russia and accepting DPRK's nuclear weapons program.
And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including Art of the Steel, while a major U.S. company is joining a Japanese company to file a lawsuit against the Biden administration. Plus, a new leader for the Archdiocese of Washington. We have analysis from Dr. Matthew Bunsen. U.S. Steel and Japan's Nippon Steel announced a lawsuit against the Biden administration. The move comes after the White House recently blocked their $14.3 billion merger. The companies say that Biden's executive order prohibiting the deal was signed for, quote, purely political reasons. Biden says he stopped the deal to protect national security and supply chains. In his final days in office, President Biden is also making moves to ban new offshore oil and gas drilling in most coastal waters of the United States. The White House says the new orders are aimed to protect offshore areas of the East and West Coast. This would not affect large portions of the Gulf of Mexico, where most offshore drilling takes place. President-elect Donald Trump says a drilling ban would be changed soon after his inauguration. The Jubilee year 2025 is underway in earnest now that the final of the five doors has been opened, the last one yesterday by an American. American Cardinal James Harvey opened the last holy door at the Basilica of St. Paul outside the walls in Rome. In his homily, Cardinal Harvey said that the church invites each pilgrim to undertake a spiritual journey in the footsteps of faith. He added that hope is a certainty because it is founded on promises from God. The 75-year-old is a native of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and worked in the papal household of both St. John Paul II and Pope Benedict the 16th. I'll do major stories out of the Vatican today. Pope Francis names a new leader for the Archdiocese of Washington, D.C. He also appoints a religious sister born in Italy as the first female prefect of a Vatican dicastery. Sister Simona Brambilla will head the Holy See's Department for Religious and Consecrated Life. The 59-year-old previously had been the dicastery's secretary. The Vatican also announced that Cardinal Robert McElroy will lead the Archdiocese of Washington. The 70-year-old cardinal moves from San Diego and will take over an archdiocese with more than a half a million Catholics. He replaces Cardinal Wilton Gregory, whose age-related resignation was accepted earlier today. Cardinal Gregory is 77 years old. And for more on all of this, let's turn now to Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director for EWTN News. Matthew, great to see you. First off, your reaction to Sister Simona's appointment and the significance of it.
Well, I think Pope Francis has started the year with some pretty significant moves. We have anticipated over the last few years, especially since the promulgation of the decree called Praedicate Evangelium, that there would be women continuing to be promoted to different Vatican offices. We've seen that as really one of the hallmarks of this pontificate. What this does is to take the unprecedented step of actually appointing, in this case, a woman religious, as you said, Sister Simona Brambilla, to the role of prefect of one of the Vatican's major dicasteries, in this case, the dicastery that oversees men and women religious around the world. This, as I said, is quite the innovation, but it continues one of the real determinations on the part of Pope Francis, both to elevate the role of women across the board. Now we have about 23% of Vatican employees are women, especially holding positions of authority. And this is a pattern, I think, that we're going to see continuing. So all things are possible. It's worth noting, however, that she will be joined in this new leadership role by a cardinal who will be actually working for her. And that is Cardinal Angel Fernandez Artim, who will be pro-prefect of the same dicastery, in part because there are certain functions that still have to remain among those who are ordained. But again, this is a very major development.
Yeah, it certainly is. Can you talk to us a little bit more about her background and exactly what she will be doing in this new position?
Yeah, she's a very longtime member of the Consulata Missionaries. She served for a number of years in Mozambique and then was also the head of the Consulata Missionaries for about 14 years before being appointed to one of the dicasteries, in fact, the very one that she's now running. She's extremely well-educated, so with the Gregorian University, with degrees in psychology. And now coming into this role, she's going to be, like I said, the highest-ranked woman in the Vatican. There's a woman who's actually in the second position for the governorate of the Vatican City State. That was considered to be very important. This, however, is even more significant.
Yeah, and what's been the reaction?
People around the church, I think, weren't necessarily surprised. Again, this is somewhat anticipated in Praedicate Evangelium, but I think it's being welcomed in many different quarters. There are still a lot of canonical details and perhaps even theological details that will have to be worked out a little bit as to how she will be sharing this authority, in part, with Cardinal Artim. But let's make no mistake, Pope Francis has put her in charge of this dicastery, and people all over the world are taking notice.
Yeah, definitely. I want to talk about what's happening in Washington, D.C. now. Cardinal McElroy, who's coming
from San Diego,
and he's going to be named to lead the Archdiocese of Washington, D.C., and as we mentioned, a half a million faithful here. What more
can you
tell us about him, Matthew?
Well, he is certainly one of the most highly educated of the American bishops. He has two doctorates from Stanford, I believe, and also the Gregorian University. He is also considered, however, one of the most progressive bishops in the U.S. and a longtime self-proclaimed champion of certainly what he sees is Pope Francis's vision for the church. He's been rewarded for that. He's had steady promotion, including to the cardinalate in 2022, and there has been an expectation for a while that he was going to be named to one of the larger sees in the United States, so here we are. The timing, of course, is very interesting here, 2 weeks before the inauguration. I think that's being interpreted that Pope Francis really wants his voice in D.C., the seat of the American government. He has most certainly been a critic of Cardinal McElroy has, of Trump's policies in the past, especially immigration. Today, in his press conference, however, he struck a pretty moderate tone. He expressed his hope for the success of the administration, for the good of the country, but at the same time, he signaled his determination to speak out and to oppose those policies on the part of the incoming Trump administration. that he sees might be contradicting Catholic social teaching, especially the dignity of the human person.
Yeah, very interesting indeed there. And as we mentioned, he's going to replace Cardinal Wilton Gregory, who's stepping down at the age of 77. Talk to us about his legacy here in Washington.
Yeah, Cardinal Gregory is a figure who has been in service for the church as a priest and a prelate and then as a cardinal for some 50 years. He was a convert. He at one point was the youngest bishop in the United States. He was also the first African-American president of the USCCB. He was also the first African-American to serve as the Archbishop of Washington. He was also the first American cardinal. He has built a legacy of trying to build a consensus of reaching out. But I think he will also be remembered especially for his time as president of the conference in those very dark days in the early 2000s. When the clergy sexual abuse crisis exploded. As president, he was able to shepherd the conference through those difficult days that ultimately ended with the approval on the part of the Vatican of the Dallas Charter, the norms for protecting minors. That is a norm that we still have and that has really established certainly the U.S. Church as one of the gold standards for the protection of minors across the United States. He would be the first to say that much more needs to be done. And I can say that Cardinal Gregory will be leaving that as, I think, one of his biggest legacies. And I think he'll be remembered for that for many years to come.
Yeah, definitely a really big day indeed as well. Dr. Bunsen, always great to be with you. Thank you so much.
Great to be with you and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, Leading the Way, Pope Francis tells the faithful how they can be like the wise men and shepherds who worked hard on their journey to Christ. Plus, the oldest living person in the world, well, just happens to be a religious sister. We'll tell you all about her next. Orthodox Christians celebrate Christmas today and tomorrow, and in the West Bank, a reduced number of pilgrims took part in the celebrations. This comes amid rising security concerns and an increase in tension throughout the region. Even during liturgy in the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem, celebrations were muted and low-key. The Patriarch of Jerusalem is urging the need for peace and reconciliation. Pope Francis reminds the faithful that the star that brought the wise men to the newly born Jesus is a symbol of God's love for everyone. And not a sign of power or fame.
Ci chiama, cioè, a mettere al bando qualsiasi forma di selezione.
During a sermon today on the solemnity of the Epiphany of the Lord, the Holy Father said that the star shows all of us the way to salvation and love, and this is also the only path to happiness. Pope Francis also asked the faithful to be a radiant light of love and hope to all of those around us. So Pope Francis also calls on the faithful to be like the shepherds and wise men who worked hard to recognize and to honor our Lord.
Il re Messia, perché sanno che sta venendo qualcosa di unico.
During the Angelus on the solemnity of the Epiphany, the Holy Father invited pilgrims gathered in St. Peter's Square to look at how they welcomed Jesus in their own lives. The Pope also remembered the World Missionary Childhood Day and asked children to pray and show solidarity with others as part of their Christian day-to-day life. Finally tonight, the oldest living person in the world lives in Brazil and is a religious sister. Sister Canabaro is 116 years and 200 days old. She was born in the year 1908 in Brazil and remains a huge fan of the local soccer team. Look at her right there. In 2018, when she turned 110 years old, she received a special blessing from Pope Francis. She says her secret to longevity, it is her Catholic faith. Happy birthday, sister, and God bless you. And thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.